Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Stay tuned. In just a minute, we'll be checking in with the new Deer Valley president and CEO, Jeremy Lovett. We'll be talking about his new position. Then, local author Maya Silver talking about her new guidebook, Salt Lake, Park City, and the Wasatch Range. Evan Thayer is with Open Snow. He works as a forecaster there. He talks about how this subscription service works and what they provide for that subscription. And finally, Joe Butterfield with details about how you can participate in the annual Christmas Day Martini Bash virtually. Well, as we have reported, Deer Valley has a new president and CEO. That after Todd Shallon was tapped to serve in a newly created hospitality division for Alterra Mountain Company, the parent company of Deer Valley. Jeremy Lovett took over as of opening day, December 5th. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Jeremy, and congratulations on the new position.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Leslie.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've been doing before you came to Deer Valley.
Sure. For the last 5 years, I was running CMH Heli Skiing and Summer Adventures based in Banff, Canada. They're the world's largest heli skiing operation and just had a really incredible experience up there. Prior to that, I was working in Denver at Intrawest Resorts, the parent company for CMH. The company is now known as Alterra, which also owns Deer Valley. And my role there was largely focused on strategy and corporate development. I took on special projects, everything from turning around underperforming businesses to evaluating acquisition opportunities, negotiating sponsorship deals, even helping take the Intrawest public on the New York Stock Exchange. And before that, I was working in New York in private equity and Vienna, Austria in investment management.
Wow. So we're all kind of scratching our heads here. I mean, you've been working with a helicopter division. I mean, why would you leave some of the best snow on earth with, you know, lots of fresh powder and come to Deer Valley, where the resort's known for its groomed runs?
Sure. Well, certainly I love CMH and all the people I got to work alongside with there. And if you haven't gone heli skiing with them, it's an incredible experience. I certainly encourage it. But I saw a lot of parallels between Deer Valley and CMH. Both are world-class operations. They pay attention to the details. I love the way they treat their guests and look after their staff. And both have a beloved founder with a unique vision and that all the staff work really hard to preserve. And that really resonated with me. And then on a personal note, I wanted to get back to the U.S. to be close to our family. My wife and I have two girls under the age of two, and we wanted to live in Park City. We've always heard amazing things about the community here.
Well, welcome to Park City then. Your predecessor, Todd Shallon, had a background in hospitality. So talk about your skill set. I mean, it sounds like a lot of financial background.
Sure. I like to think I bring to the table an extensive track record of running complex businesses, leading people, building award-winning cultures, and consistently outperforming. And I found that a fresh outside perspective is invaluable in helping mature businesses such as Deer Valley flourish. Since I'm new, by default, I have to see the business through the lens of a guest, and that's critical to making the right improvements. And because of my background as an operator and an investor, I can serve as a good bridge between what was once a family-owned business and what is now a private equity-owned business. And CMH was very much the same scenario.
Yeah. So how have the first few weeks of the season gone for you on the new job?
Really excellent. I'm so impressed with what our snowmakers and groomers have done with the mountain, despite the limited amount of snow we received. And mass compliance amongst our guests and staff is very strong at Deer Valley. Every time I'm out on the mountain, I look around, and pretty much everyone has one on. And for those that forgot to put theirs up, a friendly reminder is all it takes.
Yeah. So how is it working in the restaurants? As we know, it's reservation only this season.
Yeah, really well. We've reduced capacity substantially in our indoor dining, and our food and beverage has really done a great job continuing to offer the indoor dining as well as the grab-and-go options.
Right. So people can still get into the restrooms, they're in and out, and then that's not a problem.
Correct. We've made sure that they're not going through the restaurants and really spacing them out.
Yeah. And in terms of just kind of warming up, I mean, are they allowed to just to stay for a few minutes, especially on a day like
today? We've invested heavily in fire pits as well as heaters. They're all around the mountain. We've put out some tents that have good airflow in them, so there's different options.
Okay. So tell us, I mean, if somebody wants to get a reservation, I'm guessing they can't during this busy Christmas period, but once the crowds are gone, they just go online to do that?
Yeah, well, we're not currently taking reservations for skiing. Just like always, we've been limiting capacity, and the way we do this is through our day ticket sales. When we feel like we're going to have a sellout day, based on past history of visitation, we turn off our day ticket sales, and we've been doing that in advance for certain days. And to guarantee skiing, a guest must hold a Deer Valley season or Icon Pass or have purchased a day ticket in advance to guarantee access on the days they wish to ski.
Yeah, so, but in terms of the restaurant as well, to get that reservation?
The restaurant reservations can be made online or through the Deer Valley app that we just launched.
Okay. People can just search then Deer Valley Resort for that app?
Yes, ma'am.
Ah, okay. I'll have a look. Yeah, as you mentioned, the resort is sold out, and you have suspended the sale of season passes. Have you had any response to that from people who may have been waiting to the last minute and now kind of closed out?
So we're sold out today, and then we're open the next few days until December 27th, and then sold out through January 2nd. We've been surprised. Very few guests have actually reached out. We aggressively messaged that the only way to guarantee access to Deer Valley was to purchase a ticket well in advance or, like I said, have that season or Icon Pass. And so we've been asking everyone who books lodging, rental, ski school reservations to secure their tickets at time of purchase for these products.
Okay. And then, of course, in the last few years, parking has been an issue. I'm not sure it will be just given the reduced crowds, but anything that the resort is prepared to do to handle the overflow parking this year? I know that you do get, the city allows, I guess I should say, you to do some overflow parking, but that's limited.
Yeah, we do get some overflow, like you mentioned, on 10% of our operating days, but to augment, we will be running shuttles directly to Deer Valley from Treasure Mountain every weekend and on certain holiday weekdays from 9:30 to 5:30. So just give our website a look for more information.
Okay, that's from the school grounds there at Treasure Mountain Junior High School then, that people can get a free shuttle ride.
Correct.
Okay. And we have also been reporting that Deer Valley intends to present its plans for the base parking lot development. Can you give us an idea when the public may get a look at what's being proposed?
Yeah, from keeping in mind this is my second month on the job, but what plans are still in very preliminary stages, so we're just not ready to comment on timing just yet.
Okay. Anything else, Jeremy, you want to mention to our listeners?
Yeah, I'll just say a huge thank you to all the Deer Valley staff for their tireless efforts. A big thanks to the community for welcoming me and my family in, and thanks for having me on, and thank you to KPCW for all that you do for the community.
All right. Well, Jeremy, thanks for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Have a wonderful day.
Well, with unemployment still high amid the COVID-19 pandemic and resort communities like Park City particularly hard hit, KPCW's Sean Higgins reports that ski areas have seen an increase in job applicants this winter in a traditionally underemployed industry.
Unemployment in Summit County hit an all-time high of over 20% at the start of the pandemic, according to data compiled by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. That number has rebounded to a current rate of about 5.5%, but is still well over the pre-pandemic average of just 2%. With the hospitality industry hardest hit and much of Park City's economy reliant on those types of businesses, hotel workers and restaurant and bar staff make up a significant portion of the county's unemployed. The ski industry also makes up a significant portion of the local economy, but the industry also suffers from issues of chronic underemployment, even in a good winter. Resort job boards regularly post open positions throughout the season, and current employees are often asked to pick up extra shifts. David Bird is the National Ski Areas Association Director of Risk and Regulatory Affairs. He told KPCW earlier this summer that the increased cost of living and relative isolation of many resort areas just do not attract enough American workers anymore.
Americans are not going to relocate, like President Trump likes to argue, for a five-month job in a community with significantly higher housing costs. Those days of people taking a job, a ski bum taking a job for 5 or 6 months, those are long gone.
With current J-1 visa restrictions putting a hold on the hiring of many of the foreign seasonal workers resorts around the country rely on and unemployment benefits changing, has the COVID-19 employment crisis changed this trend? Deer Valley has seen a bump in applicants overall, says Marketing Director Colleen Reardon, but the resort is still looking to fill many jobs that require employees to be indoors, like cafeteria and lodging staff during the pandemic.
We have seen an increase in applications. We have had a good return rate, and we're filling in nicely. We're doing really well. The only place that we're looking for a decent amount of staff still is in the indoor positions, right, in the indoor restaurants. Recruiting's going well. We're pleased with the results.
Representatives from Park City Mountain Resort did not return KPCW's request for comment for this story, but the Vail Resort's job board lists roughly 70 open positions in Park City, many of them indoors, but many outdoor jobs as well. This trend is not unique to Utah either. Squaw Valley in California, which, like Deer Valley, is affiliated with Alterra Resorts, is seeing similar trends. Applications are up, just not in areas where staff is necessarily needed the most. Reardon believes Deer Valley will eventually fill all of their open positions, but says the process has taken longer than usual.
We're filling those slowly but surely. We're putting our banquet staff to work in restaurants, and so we're getting there, and it's going to be fine, but it's just it's a little bit more of a slow roll than the other positions.
If you are interested in employment opportunities at either Deer Valley or Park City Mountain Resort, links to both job boards can be found on our website, kpcw.org. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Well, for his final review to cap off 2020, Mark Harrington talks about a film that could be one of the best of the year.
This week's film is Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which is currently streaming on Netflix. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom stars Viola Davis as the mother of the blues, who battles white industry executives while cutting a studio record on a blistering hot day in 1927 Chicago. During the session, Ma and her band members are also challenged by Levy, an ambitious trumpet player who's played by Chadwick Boseman in his last role before succumbing to cancer earlier this year. Levy is eager to cut out on his own and is dead set upon adding some tempo to Ma's music to broaden her appeal to urban audiences. Ma is having none of it. The film is based upon a play by Pulitzer Prize winner August Wilson, and largely mirrors the stage format, except for excerpts of still photos, which function as the film's instrumental solos, and brief external scenes serving as a chorus of racism permeating the world outside the studio. Wilson called the blues the wellspring of my art. Ma Rainey probably wasn't the first in Wilson's mind, but she embodied the lifeline which the blues provided to a generation, which scholar Angela Davis described as a mediator between historical disappointment and the new social realities of an evolving African-American community. As Ma puts it, you don't sing to feel better, you sing because that's a way of understanding life. The acting by the ensemble cast led by Davis and Boseman is near flawless. Director George C. Wolfe employs his Broadway chops to deliver a movie that feels like a movie, but adheres to the dialogue cadence of a stage performance, which maintains its original emotional and intellectual intensity. The result is, again, early season award buzz for Miss Davis and perhaps the finest performance of Chadwick Boseman's all-too-short career. The actor displays a range far superior to his prior leads as he dances between aggressor and victim, hater and lover, and hope and despair. The film is fittingly dedicated to Boseman as a celebration of his artistry and heart. So, on my ski trail rating system, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom earns my highest Black Diamond ski trail rating. The film, from a play conversion, is no 12 Angry Men. It is a tour de force of the nobility and heartbreak of blues. As only a Marsalis family member could pull off, music producer and composer Branford Marsalis avoids simple copycat voiceovers by repackaging Ma Rainey's sound in a way which retains authenticity yet resonates with today's audience. Viola Davis and Chadwick Boseman avoid turning their roles into caricatures and get you down and dirty in 1927 Chicago in raw, heartfelt performances. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is rated R for language, brief sexuality, violence, and the rigorous downing of a bottle of Coke. This is Mark Harrington for KPCW's Film Review.
Good morning. Well, just in time for Christmas, Summit County resident Maya Silver has just published a new Utah travel guide titled Salt Lake, Park City, and the Wasatch Range. She joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Maya.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So tell us, what brought you to Utah, and when was that? I mean, how long have you been here?
I came in 2016 to go to grad school at the U, and then my husband's family also lived up in the Park City area, so wanted to be closer to them as well.
Okay, so writing is what you do?
Yep, for a little over a decade.
Okay. There are plenty of hiking and biking guides for this area already. Why did you think we needed another one?
Well, the guide was not actually technically my idea. I published it with Moon Travel Guides, and so they didn't have a book yet to cover the specific area of Salt Lake, Park City, and the Wasatch. They have a lot of books for the desert and specifically just to Salt Lake, but they wanted a little bit more of an all-encompassing guide to this general area since people often visit both.
All right. So tell us a little bit about the genesis of the book. I mean, it sounds like it kind of came to you in some notes you were writing about on your trip to Pakistan.
Yeah. So the way it works with Moon is they put out a call for writers to submit a pitch to write the guide that they want to see published. And I thought it would be a really fun project. I love writing about the areas I live in with, you know, the dining and the recreation opportunities and everything. So I responded to that pitch. I wrote a proposal when I was on my way to Pakistan to teach when I was still teaching through the U, and kind of thought it was a long shot since I hadn't written a travel guide yet. I've written a lot of other stuff, but not a guide. But it was so much fun to write. Just I've been writing about the food and restaurants in the Salt Lake and Park City area since I moved here, and it was really fun to capture all of that, as well as the many recreational opportunities that I take advantage of myself, from like climbing and mountain biking to skiing. So it was fun to write the proposal, and it was also really fun to write the book, but a lot of research.
Yeah. As you got out on your adventures, I mean, were you looking for anything specific?
I was looking for both, like, the activities that characterize the area, obviously. So you've got to cover the skiing, you've got to cover Sundance, things like that, but also some of the lesser known or less publicized aspects of the area, some of the more unique things like the land art here, Spiral Jetty, and the sun tunnels, which is technically not in the area, but I kind of grouped it in. The weirdness of the Great Salt Lake, it's such a cool, strange landscape, and there's so much to explore out there. And then just like some of the funny, quirky things about our state. Like, I think we have fantastic bakeries and sweets in the area. There's some debate about why that is, but just covering the different dessert opportunities in the area as well was fun.
Yeah. You've broken the book down into sections in Salt Lake City, Park City, Ogden, and then, of course, as you mentioned, the Great Salt Lake. Little Cottonwood, the Cottonwood Canyons have their own section, the Heber to Sundance area, Camas, Oakley, and the Uintas. I mean, this is a really big bite, given that you could have focused on either the front or the back of the Wasatch. I mean, why do the whole enchilada here?
Well, I thought, I mean, all those areas are within a pretty short driving distance from each other for the most part. I mean, some of the more outliers, like on the far ends of the Salt Lake or the Salt Flats, but you can feasibly like be staying overnight in Salt Lake and take a day trip to Sundance or Heber or the Uintas and be back in Salt Lake at night for dinner and theater options. So because everything was sort of within a feasible like day or weekend trip, I thought it would be fun to group them together and just diversify the opportunities in the area for people to come out here for.
All right. So what is the staying power of guidebooks today? I mean, at what point does it become outdated, or do you get to update it every couple of years?
It does get to be updated a couple of years. This is definitely something I was thinking about a lot, especially the past year. Like, you know, unfortunately, a lot of businesses, I think, will probably may not make it, you know, and so like how quickly does the dining section become obsolete, which is really sad. This will be updated every few years. There will be a lot of like online content on Moon as well to complement the guide and enhance it. I do think, you know, with online guides and blogs becoming much bigger every year, I don't know how much longer the travel guide has a place, but I do think it's really handy to have like a small portable guide that you can just have in your car and be flipping through as you're driving. Especially there's a lot of areas that don't have service out here, so to be able to drive into the Uintas and have that in print with you is super handy.
The book has a ton of photos. Are they all yours?
No. I don't know what percent are mine. I would guess like around 50. And I also had a lot of friends in the area send me their photos. They're credited toward the end of the book as well. So that was awesome to have other people snapping photos for me on their trails and dining experiences around the area. And then a few the publisher secures rights for as well.
All right. And then just the timing of the book. I mean, did it come out at a time when we're supposed to be staying home?
It did. And obviously there's a major inherent challenge with launching a travel guide in a time when we're all supposed to be at home. But I think everybody is itching to get out there. And I think it can be a useful resource for planning future adventures and getting excited about the summer. And I also think if you are going to take a trip, like people are still traveling in some ways, a road trip or a domestic trip is probably a safer bet than flying internationally or, you know, taking a more out there long trip. So I think, you know, whether you're someone in Colorado who just wants a change of pace and wants to come to Utah this summer or this winter, or you're planning a trip for 2022, which I know I'm already planning to do, I think it can be a handy resource.
All right. And where can people get it before Christmas, or is that asking too much?
I think it's still available on two-day Amazon Prime shipping. If you want to support local bookshops, which I think is awesome, you can get it at Dolly's Bookstore, I believe, unless they're out of copies. I haven't checked the inventory, but it should be available there.
All right. So what are you working on next?
I'm starting to get back into fiction. I've written fiction on and off for my whole life, so I'm starting to dive into a novel that sort of turns my thesis from grad school into a work of fiction. And then I'm still a writer at backcountry.com. I lead the copy team there, so I do a lot of writing about the outdoors all the time. And looking to get back into food writing when food writing kind of picks back up again. Right now it's a little bit of a challenge with restaurants struggling, so... Yeah.
Well, great job. Maya, appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks so much, Leslie. Take care.
Maya Silver, again, has written her new book, Salt Lake, Park City, and the Wasatch Range. La Heber Valley Hospital has completed a renovation project, expanding its bed capacity and the overall size of its facility. KPCW's Jessica Lowell has more on that.
Intermountain's Heber Valley Hospital and Heber Valley Clinic now have a larger capacity for patients and surgeries after a completed expansion. The hospital is now a third larger and bed capacity has been increased by 16%. The project added healthcare services and upgraded medical equipment capabilities. One of the upgrades allows for telehealth in the facility. Cy Hutt, an administrator for the hospital, says all the inpatient rooms now have monitors. Before, he says, patients had to drive down to Salt Lake City for services.
We are able to keep some of those patients locally and just consult that specialist in. We have that available for infectious disease, wound care as well. And then we also provide that service in the emergency department.
And while this is a huge benefit during the COVID-19 crisis, Hutt says these services were planned before the pandemic started.
We were very much going in this direction anyway, because it just makes sense for resource utilization, where you have a shortage of these specialists and are unlikely to be able to have one of those individuals live there in Heber City and be available full time. We're able to involve them in the care of a patient as we need to.
Hutt says an increased number of women want to deliver their babies at the hospital, so the renovations also expanded nursing rooms and a new nursery. And the center will also accommodate cancer treatment. Hutt says the hospital started offering chemotherapy in November. Jessica Lowell, KPCW News.
Well, last week, one of the forecasters for Open Snow, Evan Thayer, presented to the Park City Rotary Club about this new forecast service. He joins me now on the phone, calling in from his car, I believe, from the Alta parking lot. Good morning, and thanks for joining us, Evan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us about Open Snow. What is it, and how does it work?
Open Snow is a ski and snowboarding weather website. It started as several different local forecasters throughout a few of the major ski hubs of the West, Tahoe, Colorado, and myself here in Utah. And about 8 or 9 years ago, we joined forces together and we created one website with the goal of providing the best and most accurate weather forecasts throughout not only the United States, but the world.
Oh, okay. So I'm wrong. So you guys have been around for almost a decade then, huh?
We have, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a membership service?
The forecast, the five-day forecast, and then my personal forecast, which are written in sort of a blog format, those are free. But there is a subscription that gives you 10-day forecasts. It gives you a bunch of map overlays that we use actual forecast models. So you can look at the source itself, and that's available for a small annual fee.
So are you all meteorologists?
Not all of us are meteorologists by trade. Several of us went to meteorology school, but then pursued other careers, myself included. I originally went to school for meteorology, but ended up doing computer science for a while, and I sort of got back into meteorology by accident.
Okay. So what do you think makes open snow forecasts more accurate than others? I mean, what are you doing differently?
You know, I think first and foremost, we're all either skiers or snowboarders. So what we do is we take the same model forecasts that say the same models that the National Weather Service uses, but we contextualize it for skiing purposes. So how is this weather going to affect your ski day? How is it going to affect your week? So I think what we do is we provide those same, we look directly at the models, but then apply it to like a skier's perspective.
All right. So how granular can the forecasting be?
It can be very granular. A perfect example is today. I'm at Alta, as you said earlier. I'm actually just standing next to the lift line. It's snowing here, and they got between 14 and 18 inches of snow in the past 24 hours. And if you look only 2 miles to my east at Brighton, they're reporting 7 inches of snow. So you can easily see double the amount of snow over very small areas. So it's very granular. There's a lot of specifics and details that can affect each and every storm.
Yeah, and then how do you predict then what happens at one resort versus another one just a few miles away as the crow flies?
So a lot in this case and in a lot of cases, it has to do with the wind direction. A lot of the snow we get is generated from something called orographic lift, which is just the terrain lifting air and cooling it, causing it to condense and fall as snow. And topography influences that. So if we have a specific wind direction, that can mean that one area is favored over another. And here in Utah, that orographic lift is responsible for a lot of our snow. So you get large differences over small areas.
And talk also about the weather patterns that make the big difference between the resorts. You know, it's always interesting to watch new meteorologists come on to our radio station and give weather updates and really don't understand between the northwest and the southwest flow and who gets impacted by those.
Right. And so, like, for example, Little Cottonwood Canyon, where I am now, benefits in that northwest flow. We've seen a lot of that so far this season. Southwest flow usually favors Big Cottonwood Canyon, Brighton. Deer Valley does very well in a southwest flow, Sundance, Snow Basin. You kind of learn these, and then there's kind of wraparound storms. Oh, there's an avalanche bomb you may have just heard go off in the background. But there are wraparound storms that kind of the flow comes out of the east, and those favor the Wasatch Back, again, Deer Valley and Park City.
Okay. And then it specifically about Park City, so we do best with only those wraparound storms? That's when we get those?
Not necessarily, no. Hmm. You know, the wraparound storms do favor Park City, but I would say Park City does best in just one of those big, strong, full moisture storms where you have a lot of forcing that pushes the snowfall up over the crest of the Wasatch, and you're not relying so much on just that orographic lift. If you can get a lot of forcing and a strong jet stream, it's just going to push all the snowfall right over the Wasatch, and everybody gets a lot of snow, including Park City.
Yeah. And so, again, with the Cottonwood Canyons then, I mean, we've got a difference of, gosh, nearly, well, almost a foot, 10 inches, yeah?
Yes. Yep. And that's just that northwest flow orographics that it just kept snowing here last night.
Hmm. And then what about the lake effect? Does that also impact Little Cottonwood more so than Big Cottonwood?
It can. Little Cottonwood's a little bit closer proximity, and it's in a little bit more favorable position southeast of the Great Salt Lake. But Park City can get in on lake effects. So can Snow Basin and areas directly east of the lake. That all depends on the wind direction. And the lake does contribute to some of the snowfall. About 5% of the snow, they say, is directly because of the Great Salt Lake. Not a huge amount, but it does add a little bonus. And that typically happens in the early season when the water temperature of the Great Salt Lake is a little bit warmer.
All right. In terms of the La Nina or El Nino pattern this year, which one are we in?
We are in a strong La Nina this winter season, and La Nina favors the northern branch of the jet stream, whereas El Nino, usually you see a stronger southern branch. That just means that the farther north in latitude you get, the higher the chances are of you seeing above normal snowfall this year. So northern Utah has a little bit better chances than southern Utah of seeing good snowfall.
And since the Wasatch seems to be right in the middle, it can go either way here, huh?
It can go either way. El Nino and La Nina are not a guarantee of anything. At most, you're just ever so slightly stacking the dice in your favor or in your disfavor, I guess.
All right. Well, without your charts in front of you, can you kind of give us a five-day forecast of the Park City weather? I mean, it sounds like we got a little bit of snow, but it's going to not be a white Christmas.
No, it's not. We're going to see clearing later today and tomorrow into Christmas Day. We will see another very weak storm brush northern Utah late Saturday into Saturday night. That could bring maybe a few inches to the mountains, but we're not really seeing a big storm. Another weak storm maybe early next week. The hope right now is that when we get to 2021 in the new year, there are signs of a more conducive pattern for bigger storms. So I have my fingers crossed.
Okay. People, again, can follow along at opensnow.com. Is that
yep,
the way?
They can. They can. Yep, opensnow.com. You can just search for Utah and the Utah Daily Snow, which is my personalized forecast, and it's updated every morning.
Okay. Hey, Evan, appreciate your time. Anything else you'd like to tell us?
No. Go out there and have fun. Have a great season. Wear a mask. Be safe and have fun.
Okay. Evan Thayer, again, is with Open Snow as one of the forecasters. Appreciate your time. Have fun.
Thank you. Bye.
December 15th was the final meeting in 2020 for the Council of Governments. This consists of Summit County Council members and mayors from around the county. KPCW's Rick Bruff reports it was also a chance for Eastsiders to bring out some of the issues that they will care about in 2021.
One topic at the COG meeting was concern over the partly finished trail linking Oatley and Camas along State Road 32. Councilmember Roger Armstrong told us that for fellow Councilmember Doug Clyde, an Oakley resident, the group South Summit Trails, and many others, finishing the trail was critical for the safety of bikers and walkers along that roadway. He said a wetlands analysis has been done on the trail and the county will move forward next year on further design. Another item he observed is that Eastside residents want to get more involved in running their EMS service. Armstrong said it's a complicated issue.
The odd thing is the state of Utah doesn't require anybody to provide EMS service. It's kind of an add-on. If you decide to do it, then the county is responsible for funding EMS service. So it's actually even outside of the fire departments. In Park City handles EMS. Park City right now actually oversees EMS for the entire county. And I think that, you know, what happens is local issues sometimes rise to the fore.
He said discussions are starting, the local mayors are involved, and they have to look at a number of things.
Part of the process as we move forward and have discussions on that issue is making sure that we have a real understanding about the level of services being provided and what the issues are around that service, such as training, making sure that people are maintaining certifications, equipment, there are just a variety of things.
Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
For years, the Park City snow riding community has celebrated Christmas on the slopes at the annual Martini Bash, but like everything in 2020, due to COVID-19, the event, which raises money for local nonprofit organizations, is going virtual. In the studio with details about how to participate this year, I have one of the organizers of the event, Joe Butterfield. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Leslie.
So start by telling us the origins of the event. I mean, it's been going on as long as I can remember.
It has. Officially, we're saying 35 years. It was originally started by Packy Lennon and Chip Pretner, both who are no longer with us, as a orphan's Christmas, basically. It evolved over time into this just great big orphan's gathering. And after Packy passed, I became really involved with it. And we just wanted to make it more of a party with a purpose. And so we raised money. Mostly the first few years, we gave money to like Jose's daughter, who was unborn at the time. We gave her mom a bunch of money. We gave Packy's daughter and his son some money. And now we're to the point where we're raising money for, in a pretty large scale. Last year, we donated $8,000 to the Peace House.
Right. So the deal is that people ski by, they have a shot or a sip, and then they drop a few bucks?
Yep, yep. And we do a long sleeve t-shirt, which have become somewhat iconic in this town now. This year we have some really great art. Rick Whitney actually came out of retirement to do the art for us this year. We also have a CDC stamped buff and some stickers, and we're selling it as a kit online at parkcitymartiniparty.com.
Okay. So, of course, given the COVID restrictions, and one of those being that you need a reservation anymore to ski, and those are hard to come by this
week. I just looked, and Christmas is open.
Okay.
I just looked.
All right. So what are you going to do? I mean, you're just asking people really to go online to contribute that way?
Yeah. Yeah. We're asking people to, help us keep our momentum going. This year, we are donating to Connect Summit County, which is mental health awareness and suicide prevention, which is pretty important these days. And then also we're going to take a portion of our proceeds and for the Navajo COVID relief as well.
Yeah, and a community especially hit hard.
Especially hit hard, for sure. So we're just asking people, you don't have to, if you don't want the t-shirt, that's fine. We have some buttons on there. You can do donations, and the kits should be start mailing out just after Christmas.
Okay. How much do you expect to raise?
So our hope is to get $10,000. We would really like to donate $10,000.
Yeah,
so
that would be great. And again, I mean, you're just kind of kicking it off now. I mean, have you seen?
It's been really well. We're about halfway there. We're about $5,200 right now.
Great.
We still have a ton of kits. They are sold as a group. We're not separating. Sorry, but
it's $50.
It's $50, mm-hmm. and this community is so great with Live PC, Give PC. We're not part of that. We're kind of on our own thing, and so we're just really hoping that people come out. We've had people from, actually, we have a family from Australia that comes to Park City every Christmas and comes to the party, and they just throw us a couple $100. They don't even take a shirt. But they've been online. They sent me an email. They've been online and they've donated. So,
okay, for all of those who've enjoyed the party for the last 3 decades.
Yep.
Again, it's parkcitymartiniparty.com.
Yep. And we're hoping that everybody skis on Christmas. We're hoping, because we're all going to be out there. The entire our group is going to be out there skiing and having fun, and that's what we're hoping to do.
Okay. Well, be safe.
Awesome. Thanks.
Anything
you
else?
Too.
Okay.
No
thanks,
matter.
Joe.
Bye.
A third district court judge has ruled against Ken Abdallah, the majority owner of the Sky Lodge, ordering him to pay a judgment of more than $2.3 million and calling for a foreclosed sale of 30 fractional share units owned by Abdallah and his affiliates. KPCW's Rick Bruff has details on the decision from Judge Kent Holmberg.
Abdallah has been embroiled in legal conflicts with his fellow condo owners for years over the Sky Lodge, located on Lower Main Street. That led to the court setting up a receivership in October of 2019, and Abdallah hasn't paid assessments since then, according to Troy Arambrew, representing the Union Square Owners Association. The recent hearing, held on December 16th, the issue was the receiver's motion for summary judgment, calling for Abdallah and his business entities to pay two major assessments. Arambrew said the assessments are for common expenses at the lodge, including repairs and maintenance needed for the roof, building envelope, water system, and other items. The attorney for the Abdallah entities, John Snow, argued that they recognize funds are due. The issue, he said, is how much. He said they admit owing an assessment of some $320,000, but the Abdallah interests own about 100 units at the lodge, both commercial and residential. Snow contended that the commercial spaces are being unfairly assessed for residential expenses. The attorney also said that Abdallah doesn't have the funds on him currently, since he's going through a divorce and a receiver in that case is overseeing his marital assets. In his ruling, Judge Holmberg said that Abdullah might take issue with the assessments set by the receiver, John Curtis, or object to the allocations set in Curtis's 2020 budget for Sky Lodge, but the judge said those objections are not an excuse to avoid paying the assessments. The judge also said Abdullah had not presented sufficient evidence for his claims, that he didn't act on earlier chances to object, and his concerns about spending decisions in the future are speculation. A forensic accounting of Abdullah's management of the Sky Lodge was presented to the court in November. Aaron Brew told the court they have not decided on the course of action regarding that information. For KPCW, I'm Rick Broth.